Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
From newsounds.org, this is the Soundcheck Podcast. Until we can welcome musicians back to our studio, our soundcheck performances here at newsounds.org are featuring a mix of remote performances and favorite sessions from the past, like this one.
There's an 82 Honda getting all its tapes stolen. Outside a party where the tension is real. There's a band inside having all their hearts broken. Other kids all want.
This is Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer. The singer and guitarist Mac McCann is one of the most respected and enduring figures in the indie rock world. He's been the frontman of the defining indie band Superchunk since 1989. He co-founded Merge Records, the defiantly independent and successful label that's home to Arcade Fire and the Mountain Goats and many others. And he's maintained an additional songwriting outlet with his project called Portastatic. But the only name you'll find on the front of his latest album is Mac's own. Non-Believers is the record, and Mac McCann is here to play some of it for us, live, solo, but very much plugged in. This first song is called Lost Again, live on Soundcheck.
Houses all split in two. I'm driving down your street. I'm kinda looking for you. I'm kinda looking for me. Houses all split in two, and the hedges are so neat. On a Wednesday afternoon in the September heat. Lost, lost again without you, my friend. Lost again without you, my friend. Saw me and said yes. The pool is already closed and the park is all a mess. The house is all split in two and now the lights are coming on. I slow down but never stop, wave to the kids out on the lawn. Hello. Lost again without you, my friend. Yeah, lost, lost again. You never saw my dead end. Lost again without you, my friend.
That is Mac McCann live on Soundcheck with a song from his solo album called Non-Believers. That tune is called Lost Again. Mac, good to have you back with us on Soundcheck.
It's great to be back. Thanks for having me.
So after all these years of Superchunk and Portastatic, finally a record with your own name on it. Which, given your last name, is not an easy decision to,
That's why it took 25 years.
Yeah. So, McCann, McCaughan.
That is the only time it will be spelled correctly in this entire album cycle.
So, you know, you look at that name, you think, McGoffin? It's none of the above.
A lot of things run through your head. No, it's McCann, and it's definitely one of the things that was weighing against me having this be an album released under my own name. But I kind of felt like Portastatic had run its course, and I had wrapped it up with a compilation of B-sides and singles and stuff that came out a few years ago called Some Small History. And so it felt like it would be taking a step back to revisit that name and use that again. I do think that band names are cooler than my name and then solo projects in general, but I figured I'd just take the plunge rather than come up with another band name and really confuse everybody that way.
Plus, it seemed like Portastatic, which may have started as a kind of solo thing, had really evolved into a kind of a band itself.
By the last couple Portastatic records, you definitely have a full band sound.
Yeah.
And those records I made when Superchunk was largely inactive.
Right.
And then Superchunk started making records again 2009, 2010. And so when it came time to make this record, I knew it wasn't going to be a Superchunk record because we'd just done I Hate Music. And like I said, I knew it wasn't going to be a Portastatic record either. And I didn't really think about it too much until I was done making the album. And then I had to kind of visit that and make that decision.
And so we have the first ever album credited to Mac McCann.
It's my solo debut, 25 years in.
Yeah. And it's called Non-Believers. Are you by any chance a Honeymooners fan?
No, I mean, I've seen the Honeymooners, but I don't know a lot about it. I'm not an expert in that.
The funniest ever scene in the Honeymooners is Ralph is the chef of the future doing a TV commercial, and he holds up the little device that he's hawking, and he says, "I will show you, non-believer."
Oh, wow. So, I need to see that.
You mean to say that you have invented a household utensil to do the work of all of these? Ha, ha.
I will show you, non-believer.
For anyone who has seen that, you know, this episode of The Honeymooners,
it's... Yeah.
But you are kind of... This does have a kind of retrospective and even nostalgic cast to it.
I mean, I guess I don't think of it as nostalgia in the sense that I feel like nostalgia implies looking back with some sort of longing or wishing that you were back in this other time. And I feel like I was coming at it from a different angle than that. And I was thinking about it, I was listening to records and bands from the early 80s in this time when technology was playing a role in music that it hadn't really played before, at least in popular music, in the form of synthesizers and drum machines and stuff. And punk rock was kind of mutating into all these different things, including new wave, but also Stranger Things and that as well. And thinking about the fact that that was all happening at a time when I was an adolescent and a teenager, and I have kids now that are will soon be teenagers and adolescents. So the larger picture for me was transitional times and the kind of cool stuff that they produce and sometimes awkward and strange things that are produced in transitional time periods, whether it's in music or in your life. And for me, those kind of awkward times and off-kilter things is what produces the most interesting art in a lot of ways.
So who were some of the bands that you just... I mean, you're talking about the Smiths, The Cure?
The Smiths, The Cure, New Order, Depeche Mode, you know, those are kind of the most popular bands,
right.
I think.
OMD.
From that era, OMD. And while many of us know the hits of those bands, a lot of those bands
earlier records are much stranger affairs, you know, the first Human League record or the early OMD records. For me, I came out of classic rock and then punk rock, and so I had an aversion in some ways to synthesizers and keyboards, you know, when I first heard them. But at the same time, there was something about them that was weird enough that kind of hooked me in. And I think New Order was kind of the first band that employed those things that I really latched onto and thought, like, this isn't my normal thing that I like, but there's something about this that is capturing me. You know? And then in addition to all those bands that we can name, there's, you know, in every town there were local bands that were doing similar things. I love that idea, too, of there being this local scene that's maybe mirroring something that's happening on a more popular scale. Mm. And the fact that the technology that everyone was using was so new that everyone was kind of doing something different with it. And they were all learning at the same time. You know, I had a friend in high school who his parents, if he continued taking piano lessons, they would buy him a synthesizer, and they did. And so just messing around with that and, you know, in his bedroom was an interesting thing. And you didn't know how to do it, but anything that you did sounded cool and right. Weird, you know.
So what was your first band, like your high school band?
High school band was, I had a couple of bands in high school, but the one that performed the most was a band called Pneumatic Underground, which was the original name for the underground in England. Of course, we wanted to sound English, you know, because it was new wave. And we did covers. We did Echo and the Bunnymen covers of The Police. We basically had Erg, A Music War, the soundtrack to that film, and we covered five or six songs from that one album, including songs by Athletico, Spiz 80.
Isn't that one of those movies that no one actually saw, but
I saw it in the theater. It's like it has great Gang of Four clips.
Well, that's the thing.
It's like so many good videos on there. But so we covered a lot of songs from that, and then we had our own songs too. But it was just, you know, we played parties and I played a few gigs at clubs. I think our biggest gig was opening for Tommy Keane, which was pretty exciting. For us, it was a big deal that this national recording artist was putting out his records on Dolphin. So, yeah.
All right. And from those modest beginnings.
and here we are.
Mac McCann with me on Soundcheck. The album is called Non-Believers. And I really like the way the album is sequenced. You know, we began the segment with a little bit of the song Your Hologram, which, despite your little disclaimer before, does have a kind of nostalgic quality. It's hard not to hear lines about, you know, the 1982 Honda getting all its tapes stolen and not...
Sure. I had all my tapes stolen more than once.
Yeah.
I can't say I'm nostalgic for that,
but it was
something that happened. It probably happened to a lot of people.
But the song you're going to play for us next is the one that wraps up the album. And, you know, it's one of those album closers. You know, it's a perfect song for where it fits on Non-Believers.
Well, thanks. I'm glad it works like that, and that's definitely the intention. And Your Hologram, which starts the record, was the song that when I wrote it, I knew that it had to be the first song, and I feel like it also dictated the rest of the songs that I wrote on the record in terms of the sound and the kind of world that it's in.
The sound world, yeah.
And then Come Upstairs, which is the last song, I feel like is a song that in some ways is in the present day, even if the rest of the record is taking place, you know, in 1983 or whatever. The Come Upstairs is almost like we're back in now.
Mm-hmm.
So I'll play Come Upstairs.
All right, it's Mac McCann live on Soundcheck.
Upstairs, come upstairs, there's castles collapsing. Don't you want to see it go down? Oh, yes, I do not want to miss the destruction that's happening. And I could use a spell from this sound. If I make it up there, meet me on the top stair. Oh, my one. Ooh, take me to some fresh air. Yeah, frankly, take me anywhere. 'Cause I'm living in the dark. And you could be the sun. Upstairs, come upstairs. There's galaxies exploding. Yeah, don't you wanna hear them go boom? Oh, yes, I do not wanna miss all the world you are decoding. So come and pull me out of this room. If I make it up there, meet me on the top stair. Ooh, my one. Ooh, take me to some fresh air. Yeah, frankly, take me anywhere. 'Cause I'm living in the dark. Yeah, I'm living in the dark. Ooh, 'cause I'm living in the dark. And you could be the sun. Mm, you could be the sun. Yeah, yeah. Yeah, yeah, you could be the sun. Well, you could be the sun.
Nicely done, Mac. Thank you.
Thank you.
Mac McCann, live on Soundcheck with Come Upstairs. That's the concluding track on the album Non-Believers, the first album in Mac's long and storied career with his own name on the cover. And so I missed by a mile with my guess about Non-Believers coming from The Honeymoon Is Weird. What does that title refer to?
Well, there's a line in the first song on the record, and I feel like... Non-believers in that context refers to kind of anyone who's not, and I'm talking about, again, kids, mm-hmm. high school age, mm-hmm. adolescents, teenagers. I feel like at a certain point, at least in our town and in our high school, anyone who wasn't in the mainstream of high school life, you all at certain points ended up together, whether you were into heavy metal or punk rock, or you're a goth or a stoner or whatever, at a certain point, those people are all the other besides, like, right. the mainstream, right? Mm-hmm. And so I there was something about that that was interesting to me, and I was thinking about specifically on weekends, people would go out to the woods and there'd be, you know, a bonfire or something, and everyone's out there with their boomboxes and sitting around, and it's all these people thrust together, even though maybe in the daytime they wouldn't necessarily hang out, or even, and then a year later, everyone's life is probably totally different, you know, because it's such a transitional time period. But for this one time period, there's, you know, all the kind of misfits or whatever you want to say were kind of together. And so the non-believers kind of refers to that. And it also refers to people who maybe think like, I wasn't like that, or I didn't have any issues in high school. I didn't have any issues when I was that age. And then you think about it and you go like, God, we were all so awkward. it's kind of about that.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting because our last guest here in the Soundcheck studio was your old friend John Fine, the guitarist and writer. And his book called Your Band Sucks is all about, the subtitle of the book is What I Saw at Indie Rock's Failed Revolution. And when I asked him to explain that failed revolution part, he talked about, you know, we were the outsiders. We were the uncool kids. And we thought that indie rock was going to topple the major labels and the whole edifice of the music industry. And of course, it didn't do that. But his book is about coming to the realization that this outsider kind of community did something else. And
well, right,
perhaps
the
something
idea,
more important.
Right, maybe the idea wasn't to become, to imply that you think you're doing something that's going to topple this other thing kind of means that you want to be that other thing in some way. And I don't know that we ever, a lot of people at least, we didn't want to be on top.
Yeah.
We wanted to be doing what we were doing, you know what I mean?
I think what John, you know, was saying was, you know, it wasn't that he thought that his band, Bitch Magnet, was going to topple anything. He just thought the whole alternative culture would provide a genuine alternative, and that it wasn't so much we want to be where they are as, you know, we want kind of a level playing field.
Right.
Lots of mammals without big dinosaurs trampling on them.
Right, right. And to some extent that happened, though it wasn't... I don't think it was indie rock that did it.
No, I don't think so. the digital revolution did a very thorough job of that. But you guys at Merge, you know, you've sailed your own course, and, you know, it's been choppy waters at times, but here you still are. How did you sort of make your way through these turbulent times?
I mean, I feel like we made our way by really not changing a lot about the overarching thing that we were doing. And that's not exactly helpful advice, but it is kind of how we've always operated, is a little bit keeping our head down and working on what's in front of us, the records that we're working on right now, the records that we're putting out this year, next year, the artists that we're working with, as opposed to devising a plan of world domination,
right,
or something, you know,
right,
what I mean?
Yeah.
And while certainly... Merge has grown in scale and how many people work there and that kind of thing. Laura and myself.
That's Laura Balance.
Laura Balance. We started the label as fans of bands and to put out our own records and our friends' records. And we still kind of feel like we do that the same thing,
yeah,
again, on a larger scale. But that's, you know, that's how we've always worked. And I feel like allowing Merge to grow organically, for lack of a better word, is the reason that we still exist, because I don't feel like we ever overreached.
Yeah. Of course, having Arcade Fire win the Grammy for Album of the Year and then stay with you when they could have gone to any number of major labels speaks volumes about the way you guys do business.
Yeah, I think that the relationship we have with our bands and the relationship we have with our fans as well is really important, because, like you're saying, either one could go,
yeah,
wherever they want to go at any,
yeah,
time.
You know, I'm glad you mentioned the fans, because I don't know if you had this experience growing up as a kid, but you began to trust certain labels to be,
sure,
of interest. And it was almost like if you'd never heard of an artist or a band, but but they were on this label that you like?
Sure. I mean, I think that one question that comes up a lot in whether you're at South by Southwest or on a panel somewhere is, you know, why do we still need record labels? And I feel like for me as a record buyer and as someone who has a record label, I think that what you're talking about is still a real important role, which is something that people can look to as, well, you know, I trust this company or I trust these people. And so I may not love everything they put out, but there's a good chance that I'm going to like it. Mm-hmm. And while certainly it's easier than ever now to go kind of sample what you want to hear before you buy it, I still feel like in some ways, because you can find anything that you want to find, you literally find everything all at once.
Right,
so
right.
So having these kind of filters in some ways is helpful for a music fan, you know.
Absolutely. And the more there is available, the more you need those gatekeepers, those filters.
Sure. And you know, whether it's a label like you're saying or a respected a radio show or a fanzine or something where you go like, I trust what these people say.
Yeah.
I think that it's a great thing for a music fan.
So, Mac, how do you balance the Merge Records with your own musical career? I mean, and has that balance shifted over the years?
I think it's always shifting a little bit this way and that, depending on, again, how active Superchunk is, for instance, or you know, if I have a new record out like this one. But you know, for the first 10 years that Merge and Superchunk both existed, Superchunk was definitely the dominating force there, and that was kind of our day job to a certain extent. And then when Superchunk slowed down, we were much more at Merge all the time. And you know, when we're not on tour, we are at Merge every day.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, that us slowing down Superchunk and being in the Merge office more coincided with some of our biggest records. So I feel like we were very fortunate that things kind of happened the way we did, the way that it did, and that we were around for, like you said, Arcade Fire, Spoon's biggest records,
right.
She and Him, you know, a lot of the biggest records that we put out happened between, you know, 2000 and now. So, like I said, very fortunate it happened that way, but it's just a constantly evolving thing because there are only 24 hours and we have families and,
yeah.
You know, you're just trying to make sure that nothing falls through the cracks, you know.
Yeah. And you want to have a little time for a life as well, away
sure.
from the various jobs. Mac McConn with us on Soundcheck, playing some of his new songs live for us, but you're going to wrap up with an old one.
I am. I'm going to play a song from a Superchunk record that's called Come Pick Me Up, and the song is called Hello Hawk.
Everyone, when you come high into view over Bellevue, and those bricks begin to hum, yeah, glass vibrates with the tone. You're nothing but alone. United Nations glows with light, and you're up all night. Well, this is no one's home. Yeah, sensing one way free. These canyons killing me. Will you dive and lift away all the dying day falling from my feet? Hello, hawk, come pick me up. 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 Though it was in the heat, somehow I knew all that it was you beating down grab us by the neck. I volunteer as prey. We could leave the world in gold if this muddy road would only wash away. Hello, hop, come pick me up. Hello, hop, come pick me up. Hello, hop, come pick me up. Hello, hop, come pick me up.
That is Mac McCann solo, live here in the Soundcheck studio with an old Superchunk favorite, Hello Hawk, from the 1999 album Come Pick Me Up, the album title coming from a line in the song. And then some years later, Ryan Adams writes a song called Come Pick Me Up.
It's a great song.
And then you guys cover that song, just to confuse everybody.
Yep.
Nicely done. The album is called Non-Believers. It is out now, and I need to say it? On Merge Records.
Of course.
I don't know how you do it all, Mac, but thank you so much for joining us and fitting us into your little juggling act.
Well,
great to see you again.
Thanks again for having me. It's great to be here.
This is Soundcheck.
Been listening to an episode of the Soundcheck podcast from our archives. Our technical director is Irene Trudell. Our producer is Karen Havlick. I'm John Schaefer. You can see and hear much more on our website. Check it out at newsounds.org.